Hello, my fellow Lashpreneurs. Welcome to episode 9 of the Lessons of the Lashpreneur. My name is Tara Walsh, and I am joined today by Miss Hillary Brand of My Brand Lashes. Now, when we're talking about the realities and legalities of expanding your lash business, we've been doing this for 3 weeks, and we have talked about what it's like to stay solo. We've talked about what it's like to grow a very large business to include multiple staff. And we've talked about what it's like to keep your business small, but have a small team of staff. And now Hillary Brand of My Brand Lashes, who has a product line, who is an internationally known educator, who is a judge for lash artists in competitions all over the world, is here to share her experience, not only in expanding her lash business as a solo lash artist, but what it's been like for her and her journey in growing an empire in the lash industry. So welcome, Hillary. Please go ahead and take a second to introduce yourself.
Well, hello there, Hillary Brand. Thank you, Tara, for inviting me to be on this. This is really cool.
Thank you.
At the moment, how do I even sum up my whole life right now?
Right. Lashpreneur life, right?
Basically, yeah. No, there's been a lot of really cool things that I've had the opportunity to be a part of. And I did grow from being a traveling single lash artist to being in my home, to having my own shop, to having employees, to not having employees, starting a product line, traveling all over the world teaching. Now I'm doing a lot of public speaking. And on top of all of that, I'm a mom. I have 2 kids. I've been married for almost 12 years now. And so there's not a ton that you could throw at me in the lash world that I probably haven't been through at this time in my life, but that's why I love sharing what I know. Like, that's why we do tips of the day. That's why we get really real. And I like to show up on Instagram either mostly homeless or basically.
You're my inspiration.
No, I like that you're bringing this whole part of the industry to light, you know, what it looks like from the backside of the lash world. It's not always sparkles and rainbows and unicorns. It's a lot of mom bums, dry shampoo, and Starbucks.
Preach it, sister. You're speaking my language. So just to give viewers a heads up of my relationship with Hillary, 3 years, almost exactly, a little over 3 years ago, I randomly happened to stumble on Hillary Brand's volume lash training because she was the next person to offer volume lashes in San Diego. I had no idea who she was at the time, but thought, I need volume training. Here she is. Let's go for it. Little did I know the connection that I would have with Hillary. I was a new mom at that time. I remember the first email I sent you, Hillary, was, I still am breastfeeding. I have to take a break to pump. Like, what is this situation going to look like? Because I had never been to an official lash training before. So she kind of walked me through that, A, it was okay. Like, it wasn't that big of a deal. It wasn't that serious. So there was a connection of her and I being moms and lash artists. I was not a business owner at this point. I was still an employee. It was through taking Hillary's class, and I saw the other women in the training who were all running their own businesses. And I think I was the only employee where I thought, well, if they can do it, I can do it. So fast forward about 3 months later, I actually stepped out on my own to open up my own business. And Hillary has been a huge resource for me just to bounce ideas off of. And over time, we just had a connection and we kept communicating back and forth to where she was kind of my go-to person to answer the question of what do I do next? Because she had so much experience in the industry and I was still kind of fresh and new. Fast forward even more time, we have been involved in each other's businesses in big ways and smalls over the past couple of years. And she was a huge proponent and a huge cheerleader in my court for me to even launch and start something like the Lashpreneur. I remember having this, aha moment, this come to Jesus moment with Hillary where I was getting ready to expand and bring on staff. And she said, is it really your dream to have a staff? And in that question alone, I said, no, it's not. And that's where the Lashpreneur idea was born. So I owe a lot to Hillary. I'm very grateful for her role in my career and in my life. And I'll be honest with you without getting too emotional that I would not be the lash artist and the business owner and the woman and a mom that I am today because if I didn't have Hillary's influence in my life. So she is just that incredible of a woman, and most people who have had any sort of engagement with her understand just how empowering she is. So thank you for that, Hillary. Enough of the love fest. Let's move into applicable tips. So Hillary, if you'll share with me kind of what your journey was going from a new lash artist, just working out the skill, you know, trying not to stab somebody with a tweezer, into moving into the point where you were ready to expand and bring on staff.
Tara, I've never been ready to do anything in my business. Let me just start it there. Not ever. My motto right now is just, I've always built the plane while I'm flying it. It's all, opportunities have always been thrown in and I've never asked for any of them. And so now I've never been scared to take any of those opportunities either. So sometimes getting in on something really early, like eyelash extensions, when I started doing them, there were only 2 companies in Utah doing them. And at the time,
they were in Utah. Yeah, where lash artists are born and bred like bunnies now. There are only 2 taken away.
Well, listen, there's some incredible talent here. and the thing was, is I had a real chance to get into something like that. Now, the education was not great.
Right.
Because of my willingness to go and make mistakes and try new things. And I did have a background in hairstyling. So I had a fundamental view of what styling should look like. And I brought that into the eyelash world for myself. It was bumpy along that way. Oh, and PS, the big bulk of where I started doing lashes was when we had our huge recession, bubble pops, everyone's out of jobs and homes.
We're heading that way again, unfortunately.
But you know what? The beauty industry doesn't die because of that. Really, ladies will save money for lipstick. Even during the Great Depression, there was still lipstick being purchased. And women will do almost anything to feel beautiful because it brings a huge level of the ability to face your life. Even when you don't feel awesome, at least you look awesome. Like, right. That is the thing that women will do.
Make it till you make it.
Yeah, really, it is. And so a lot of us are wearing a lot of foundation just to get through the day. And you know what? I'm fine with that. The longer the lashes, the better some days.
So when did you get to the point where you were excelling on your own solo that the opportunity of bringing on staff came into play?
Yeah, I was booked. I was super, super, super booked. And I had been teaching at Acadia School of Aesthetics for a little while. And I had the chance to meet Erin. Her last name was Wilkes at the time. It's now Taylor, but she works with Corvaletta. She's great. And she was one of my students. She caught on to lashes very quickly. And she wasn't my client at that time. And I thought, well, she's definitely licensed and she's had her training and I trained her like I like to do lashes. So I know the integrity of the work would be safe if I handed one of my clients over to her. So she came to work with me for a little while. And we grew from full books from me spilling over extra to her. And then she got super full. So we hired on 2.5 more, because the third girl was still really early on and very part-time, but we had a staff of 4 going on. But that was also the first lash bar in Utah. There wasn't another one that I could find. So it grew very quickly, but it was like overload and I didn't want to turn people away. And at that time I wasn't super comfortable raising my prices. So we hired instead.
Yeah, right. That seems to be a lot of people's approach. I don't want to have the conversation of raising my price, but I'm willing to take on a lot more responsibility with other staff. So
what do you got when you hire on staff? Each person, it becomes like a marriage with that person. Like, it's really important that you try to keep them happy and that you try to make sure they're booked. And sometimes you'll even not pay yourself, if you will, if you're really crappy at managing your own business, to make sure the other person at least walks away with a paycheck. And it's one of those relationships that we don't look at that way until we're in it. And when it dissolves or disappears, it can be heartbreaking because you put a lot into those relationships. So be aware that if you choose to have employees, it can lean into something that's more than just a work employee relationship.
And to clarify, you were commissioned. So you were doing what, like 50% commission?
I was doing 6. They got 60. I got 40.
Woo!
Yeah.
Lemons don't pay for themselves. So what was that like, having that much from a business owner perspective, doing the commission way with 60% of your business being handed over to your own staff?
Yeah, I don't recommend it. There is a level of generosity that I like to have, and because I was committed to these girls being taken care of, it wasn't a good plan. It just wasn't a good plan. So hourly maybe would have been better for me if I'd looked back on it, or the requirement for the other person to bring in as many of their own clients as they could, because we were overloaded, those people that came in automatically got a clientele. So we gave right. them really incredible money, and they had full books very quickly. So I didn't require a lot of receive from the give that I was giving.
Right. So you almost create, and not all cases, but you almost create this entitlement. And I think that's a lot of what those who are willing to work for someone else, thinking that if they're not going to get at least 50%, the problem is when you bring somebody on at 50%, where do you go from there to keep them happy, to feel like you're rewarding them for good work? I know one business owner in Vegas now, she pays her girls hourly, and I believe there's a little bit of a commission to it, but she structured them as a W-2. But she's like, they were asked for a raise every 6 months, and I can't just keep giving them more and more and more without getting, I'm not getting any more of a return. It's not like we're consistently raising our prices, so the benefit is there for both of us. And she's kind of like, I kind of cap out at people. So when you start off really high bringing somebody on, you have a limit to how much you can pay them before you're actually losing money by keeping them on as a staff.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that wasn't something that I looked ahead and thought maybe right. you have a place for them to grow, because, you know, growth is part of appreciation.
Right.
And that can be something that can be shot down really quick. I also want to, since I've said names, I want it to be very clear that these girls were really good workers. They did amazing lashes, and I was very grateful to have them there.
Right.
So I want to be very clear that
it was a good experience, but a learning experience.
It was a good learning experience. Yeah.
So what, you actually ended up opening up a second location. Is that correct?
I did. So Vegas at the time, I'd actually sent one of my clients there. She was living there, newly moved. And she said, how can we find a lash artist for me? And at the time, Instagram didn't have hashtags yet. So remember those
way back.
You couldn't find people. And so she did some research. I did some too. She sent me pictures of the work of the person she found. And immediately I could see the glue on the lash line. I'm like, not a good thing. Like, don't go there. But she ended up going there and called me later. This was also just after my second baby was born, and he was only like 3 or 4 weeks old. And she sends me a picture of her lashes, and they're all puffy. I call them hamburger eyes. Like, they were just swollen. And so I called my husband at work. I said, hey, so what you doing? He's like, nothing. Like, want to go to Vegas right now? And we dropped the baby off at my mom's and drove to Vegas, and I took off her lashes. I didn't know where to send her.
Wow.
But it got me thinking, because we'd done like a month of research trying to find someone that was awesome, and we couldn't find them. So I'm like, how about I go to Vegas and start
opportunity?
Yeah. How about that? 3 weeks later, we were in Vegas, like living there. It was so fast.
Bam.
Yeah. Bam.
And so you started a location there.
I did.
So was it just you when you started, or did you go with the intention that you were going to have kind of the same business structure as you did in Utah?
I wasn't sure I was going to expand there with more people, because we were in the throes of, again, new baby, new house, new city, new location. So that wasn't in my bandwidth yet. And I'm glad I didn't, because when Russian volume came on the scene, I wanted to have some flexibility in my schedule and some relax in my energy, if you will, to be able to go learn that without having to worry if a client was misbehaving or if a client or an employee didn't show up. And it was just a lot of work.
So when did the educator part come into play for you?
I'd been educating all along, but when Volume Lashes came out, I actually remember asking Irina Lovechek, I said, I'd love to teach this. What would it take for me to learn this? And I mean, with very limited English, she speaks English much better now, but she said, it's your business. You do what you want.
And I was nice though,
right? Like, okay, well, I'll do what I want then. But I did give myself a minute to learn, and then I was already posting pictures on Instagram of what Volume looked like at that time. And since I was pretty new, it was still being decided what Volume looked like. And people started asking, do you want to train me? And they were, some were past students, and others were new to lash artistry in Vegas. And so I went from one or two people who at that time were like, oh my gosh, you want to charge how much for a class? And pretty soon having such full sold out classes that there was a waiting list. But I got to develop my teaching skills during that time. And no, I wasn't always a perfect teacher, but I think the thing I can say is that you learn as you teach, which was really impactful for me. So I even think that people who have learned how to do volume should teach even someone who won't do lashes how to do them, because you start to figure out why you do what you do by teaching it.
Yeah, I think that's a huge thing that I learned from you at the educator retreat you did last year, was that I had to put what I inherently knew in my brain into words that somebody else would understand, that you have to take what just comes natural to you because you've practiced it so many times to somebody who is completely oblivious to what it is that you are doing. It's also the same. I take the same approach to marketing with trying to get a potential client in the door. You have to explain that to them in terms that they understand. So a lot of times, you know, saying 5D fans or, you know, 100 to 600 lashes per eye is volume gets kind of confused, or you can kind of turn off the wrong people that volume would be appropriate for, like somebody who has hormonal damage to their lashes, or they're just weak and brittle. Like they're not going to get 600 lashes per eye. Maybe they don't want that. But the way that I've worked it in my marketing is, when I'm explaining the difference between classic and hybrid and volume, is what does it replace in their makeup routine? Because that's something that they can comprehend, right? That's something that somebody who has no idea what lashes are, you know, who doesn't understand you can't glue them to skin, that doesn't understand that we don't just plop them on there. You have to kind of put it in terms that they understand. And that's kind of how I approach marketing, is like, can a five-year-old understand it?
Right.
Yeah, so how did you grow from there? You started educating, you had two locations at this point. What was kind of the next steps for you?
So the location in Utah was dissolved after I got into Vegas, and it was a good thing. My dad had passed away. We'd actually had some, like, you know how tragedies happen in three.
Yep.
So yeah, it was not something that I wanted to keep working on over there. And when you lose a parent, you just change. That's just how it is. Anyway, having all of my focus in Vegas, also through the grief of my dad dying, I laid in bed one day and just trying to not cry, but I was on Instagram trying to figure it out, because Facebook was interesting to me, but it didn't seem to bring money at that time.
Right.
Instagram was cool because you could find people, and I was still figuring out that it could link people together. So it went from education to travel, but I should probably tell you about Tyranny. I should tell you about Tyranny. We had, while I was learning volume lashes in Arena Lovechek's class, there was a girl named Tyranny there. And she was another lash artist in Vegas. And maybe some people remember her. Her Instagram tag was Doe Eyed Lashes. And she was doing lashes, actually a lot like the lash wall that you have behind you. They were just so cool and texturized. Like, she made the Kim Kardashian cool before Kim Kardashian did. Like, if you were just looking for that, she did that. And she did capping and stacking and volume. We connected in LA, and then we went home and I said, hey, can I swap lashes with you and we can practice when we get home? Totally open to it. She's the sweetest girl. And then as I got to know her more, she had told me that she worked from 7 a.m. in the morning until a.m. in the morning, until sometimes 12 or even 1 a.m. the day, the whole day. But she loved it, and she had amazing clients. And I think this story is in memory of her and also tribute to her, because she had had adventures before that point, but she was only working. Her life was not anything but work. And then one day we were connected on Facebook. So she posted, does anyone want to go on a walk with me? And for 5 seconds, Tara, I wanted to go on that walk with her. I was doing the same sort of rigorous long days behind the chair all the time if I wasn't training. And I don't remember why I didn't go, but I didn't. And then a couple of days later on one of the forums, we heard that she had passed away. And she was 30 and I was 30. And it hit me so hard, because I didn't want to be working to the point where, what if one day I dropped dead and that was the end of my life? Right. And I know that's like super it drops out. But what she did, what her life was to me, plus my interactions with her, was she was very inspiring. She was a hard worker. And the thing was, is I was missing bedtime with my kids and dates with my husband. And honestly, I wasn't taking care of myself very much. All of the weight that I've gained since baby number two has been because I sit on my ass day in and day out, either with tweezers or on the computer.
Right.
And it's something that I haven't prioritized for myself is my own health. Now, I don't know why she passed away. All I know is that I wanted to take care of myself and I wanted to go and live the life that I was hearing about from my clients, which meant I went on vacation, right? Which meant I was right. So I went home and told my husband, I don't want to do just clients anymore. And so we really leaned into education. I wrote my own manual. I started getting kits together. I was also approached by Ricky in Denmark, who asked me to come and judge the first Danish eyelash competition. And then I was invited to Sweden to teach the first Swedish volume course. And it seemed like everything just went like that.
Right.
It was once I was willing to not hold on to my tweezers so hard, my life moved on, but in a really positive way and still in the same industry that I love.
Yeah, for me, so for those who aren't familiar with me, I had a miscarriage in 2012 and rocked my world. Just bad things never happened to me. And all of a sudden bad thing happened to me. And I refused as I went through my grief and kind of getting through the depression that I went through, that I refused to not let my life be a reflection of the daughter that I lost. So in that was when I decided it's fine for me to take as much risk as I need to. And it meant I left a corporate job to go to beauty school, which was not anything anybody had ever expected from me, but I needed something that was so completely different from my life before Kaya is her name, before Kaya, that I needed a reflection of I was going to live my life differently and I was going to put myself out there, not be afraid of risk because life's too short. And I don't think that everybody has to go through some sort of traumatic thing or loss to get to that point, but it's a lot easier to just throw balls to the wall and caution to the wind when you have those like reminder that we're only here for a short amount of time. And to not be building a business and a life that you love, that you're proud of, that serves you first, not your clients first, but you first. That's, I mean, I get that from you, that you empower women to do what's right for them. And that is something that I have taken and done for the small little community that I have. That if we're not building a life that serves us, that fulfills us, then what are we doing it for? We don't have enough time in our lives to, you know, work a career for 30 years that we hate. There's no point in that. I watched my dad do that. And I quite frankly grew up, you know, he loved the money side of it, but I just remember him being so stressed out and I never wanted that for me or for my kids. So I am driven a lot because I want to have this balance. Now it's harder to walk in that day to day. You and I both know, like, the realities of running a business is challenging and you get tripped up on day to day life. But ultimately, if we have something that we're proud of, if we're making a positive impact in this world, whether it's through our clients, whether it's through an industry that we're, you know, growing and expanding our influence in, whether it's empowering women in general, like, that is something that I'm okay working with and taking time away from my family, as long as it also in return is being able to give back to my family and the things that are important to me.
Absolutely.
So thank you for that.
No, thank you. And I think I would like to add to that is that there's not really safety in no risk, right? Like, things are still going to happen. So you can take the chance and see where it can grow you. I didn't say take you. I said grow you and see where that could happen. Or you can stay safe. And then what? Really? And then what? Until it
gets boring. And I think you and I are perfect examples of that. What had happened if you and I hadn't taken that risk of putting ourselves out there? For you, the risk was, in a lot of ways, those little My Brand Lash Tip of the Days that you started off back when, you know, we only had 15 second videos and you had to get it out really quick and stop. But that was you in small ways and in big, taking one step forward and one step forward. And what would the lash world look like? What would your students' lives look like? What would my life look like if you hadn't been bold enough to just take the risk? And how many people watching or listening to this are in that same boat, that they are missing out on their greatness and their full potential because they're either too afraid of what somebody else on the Instagram life might think if they started putting themselves out there? Or what would they think if they published their website? Because, oh my gosh, now it's out in the world, now it's real. what would happen if the Hillary Brands or the Tara Walshes of the world didn't take that risk. And I just want everybody listening to think about, what am I missing out on by holding myself back and saying I'm too afraid?
And what are we missing out by you holding back on? Right?
Yep. That's very much the Marie Forleo, that everybody has a gift to this world that only they possess. And until you start living in who you are and being true to yourself and your wants and your dreams and hopes and aspirations, whatever, you're not only holding yourself back, but you could be impacting a world, and you are just too afraid to make that first step.
Yeah,
I got chills. So let's move on to you and your product line. Now, what did that look like?
Kill me now. Yeah, those who think a product line is just so super easy. Let me give you a reality check as to what that actually looks like.
Please, this is the platform to do so.
Our first order of tweezers, because ladies, when I started ordering tweezers, volume had just come on the scene. So you had to have special tweezers. You couldn't have two straight tweezers to do volume. So we found tweezers in computer restore shops and online. And that was the closest you could get to a boot tweezer. So when I did find them, I'm like, okay, I'm ordering 100 and that should get me plenty. And they were a great deal too. Three of them worked.
Yep.
And that's a shitty thing to figure out in class with 10 people.
Whoopsies.
Oh, right? And I mean, then I got into the business of like filing them down and seeing if it would work that way. But that's what taught me how to find the sweet spot in tweezers, was figuring out why they're not working. And then thankfully we've had lots of other tweezer manufacturers filter in, but my 2014 taxes show $10,000 of loss in looking for tweezers.
Yeah.
Not lashes. Lashes were a whole different thing. My first order of lashes, really far back, like 2010. I wasn't really willing to sell them yet. I just wanted to try them, found a manufacturer, got the colors I wanted, whatever. And then they stayed on my shelf for about 6 months. And then I opened one of them and they were all like stick bone straight.
Mm.
I had not opened them before. And so I'm sitting here going, I don't even know why this has happened. I don't know who to call about this. There were no forums on Facebook saying, by the way, if you've ever manufactured lashes, they go straight because of this. There were no Doug Shoons in the world yet explaining what fibers did, right? So all those went to the garbage. Glue was a completely different story. It's funny because it's not like My Brand Lashes product line is all from one place. We go from Europe. We have some from Pakistan from our tweezers. We have some from South Africa. We have some from, US made. There's so many different places that we source our stuff. And it's because I wanted it to work the way I needed it to work when I was behind the chair.
Right.
And if it didn't fit my standards for how I was doing lashes, it wasn't okay, because I knew there were other lash artists who had the same complaints. So we color coded things. And by the way, that's not a cheap thing to do. Asking my manufacturer to add the length, diameter, and curl to the bottom of our strips of lashes made them literally go, what's that scene from Bug's Life when the leaf falls in the line of the plants and they're like, I'm lost. Them to do something outside the box was just like, seriously, I'm just asking you, I don't know, reinvent your way of doing things. They could not. It was like six runs before they got it right.
Oh my gosh.
Really accessible now, but like, we pushed that guy. I don't know why he didn't fire us. But and like the clear cases at the time, they did not have the clear jewelry box cases. I had taken the lid off of one case with a black bottom and then another lid from another, and I turned it around and snapped it together. I said, this is what I want my case to look like, to be clear.
Mind blown.
Right? I'm lost. Same thing. It was crazy. So no, creating a product line is not for the faint of heart. And yes, there are days I want to burn it down every day. But when you have someone come in, like we had at the trade show, that was like, I love how organized everything is, or I love that you show me how the tweezers go for, which ones go for my hand type.
Right.
Or I love that you show us the proper temperature and humidity of the adhesives. Guys, this isn't something I just knew. It was stuff I figured out, and it took a long time to do. And if I can add this, I've had messages where it's like, hey, where do you get your tweezers from? I don't share that information. It's not something I have to share. I share tips and tricks all the time about application and how to be successful as a lash artist, but it's not something you are entitled to have just because someone else did it. Like, there is something to be said about standing behind the integrity of your products and the quality of your products because you're the one fishing for them and making them meet your standards. So yeah. And I was called selfish for that. And I was like, eh, oh, well.
Yeah. Same thing for Starbucks. Something they put in their soy milk, I cannot find anywhere else. And I drink chai with soy and I cannot drink it with regular milk and I just can't find soy, but yet they won't sell the soy milk to you. They'll sell you the chai, but not the soy milk. And so it's just kind of that, I'm always reminded of that when you talk about that, because I'm like, I would save thousands and thousands of dollars if they would just sell me the soy milk in bulk and I wouldn't have to go every day to get this $6 drink, but it's their trade secret, you know?
Yeah.
All right, my dear. So let's wrap up because I could talk to you all day long. Hillary and I will be in Toronto speaking at NALA this weekend. But what is kind of the message you want to leave as far as expanding your lash business, no matter what path that looks like for people who are listening or watching?
Yeah, I want to just don't get stuck on the train that you have to collect every certificate out there. Because what I'm noticing right now is that people are loving the idea of being in every class, which I am pro education, absolutely. What I struggle with is while I'm, and you'll see this too when we're at NALA, there will be hands-on demos and you will bump into people who are like, yeah, I want to try your method or a pickup. And there's still no progress in the application process. They've been filled with so many contrasting ideas of what application is that they just become collectors of certificates and not implementers of information. And so if that's your true dream, that's fine, but give yourself a solid minute before you take your next class and implement that information and go, does this work for me or doesn't it work for me? And if you're going to go in and be a teacher, make sure that you are not just great at applying lashes, but that you are someone who can explain it to a college grad and I don't know, my dad used to say, can you do it to a Harvard professor? Can you explain it to a Harvard professor? And can you explain it to a Hasey farmer? You know, like different levels of education. So your job is to speak to be understood. And if you cannot do that, if you are not good at that, please don't be a teacher, because then it's a hustle. It's not quality education. And then if you have an idea in the lash world that really you see is going to elevate it, oh my God, go for it. Please. We're all begging for you to do that, because this is no longer an industry that's closed doors and that there's no information out there. If anything, we're all begging for the newest, latest, and greatest thing, idea, concept that you could possibly provide for us. And don't hold back on that. So that's
yeah, what I remember when I was like, should I do the Lashpreneur? And you were so supportive of it. And you, I remember you saying, I want you to be one of those people that walks the walk and not just talks the talk, because you've come across so many people who had a great idea, but never put it into play or never went big with it. Even though the lash industry, there's a market for everybody. There's a market for business coaches. There's a market. I mean, who cares how many people there are? There's educators on every corner, yet there are people in the world who have new ways of doing things. And I think it was true. Like when you are a teacher, you come up with new ways of doing things because you have to explain it. And maybe through your process of trying to figure out what it is that you know, you realize you've been doing things differently than you were ever trained because you figured it out on your own. And that's worth selling or sharing with, you know, the lash community. All right, Hillary, one last little call to action. Where can people follow you? Where can they learn more about products or trainings?
Yeah, so you can find us on My Brand Lashes for Instagram. We also have a distributor in Canada now, so you can see tips and tricks from My Brand Lashes Canada on Instagram. We do have trainings on our website that you can log into, and you'll see me just speaking all over the place. And so follow our highlights and under events specifically. And if you ever want me to come out and teach a private training to you guys, or even group train your salon or whatever, if you just need a solid, motivational, honest conversation, I am good for kicking the ass. So yeah.
He is. Thank God for that. Well, thank you everybody for joining us today. Catch us Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Los Angeles time on facebook.com/thelashpreneur for Lessons of the Lashpreneur live show. Thanks again, Hillary. Have a good one.
Bye, girl.